Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi there, I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
We're real life best friends, but we met playing fake life best friends, Turk and JD, on the sitcom Scrubs.
20 years later, we've decided to rewatch the series one episode at a time and put our memories into a podcast you can listen to at home.
We're going
to
get all our special guest friends like Sarah Chalk, John C. McGinley, Neil Flynn, Judy Reyes.
Show creator Bill Lawrence, editors, writers, and even prop masters will tell us about what inspired the series and how we became a family.
You can listen to the podcast Fake Doctors, Real Friends with Zach and Donald on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Hi, how are you doing? I am Ray Harkins. We are at this podcast, which is called 100 Words or Less, and we're talking about independent music. Right? That's what we are doing here. We, as in me and you and the guest and everybody else that listens to this thing, which after, let's see, we're at episode 318. That is insane. Every time I stop to reflect on the fact that this has been going on for, you know, 5-6 years and people are still interested in coming on the show and there seems to be new people that find out about the show, I love that so much. So thank you for continually impressing me by finding out about this thing and interacting with me. And I just love that. Like it was, what did I go see the other night? Well, hold on, put a pin in that. We need to tell you the guest. The guest this week is Christina Michelle. She's the vocalist for an incredible hardcore band called Gouge Away, which I was actually bummed. They played Sound and Fury. I was there. I missed them because they played on a day that I was not attending. And they also played an awesome, awesome skate shop called Program Skate Shop, which is a basically just a skate shop and they do shows at night. And I miss them, but I am excited about their new record that's coming out in the fall. I want to say October, November. I've heard most of it. It's really, really good. If you were just kind of so-so on the band previously, this record will definitely converge you into being like, yo, they're the real deal. So her and I sat down. Technically sat down. She was probably sitting in her home in Florida, and I was sitting in my home here in Southern California, and we hashed it all out. We talked about South Florida, building communities, because that's a really, really important part to what the band does and what she believes in her own life. And then teaching as well. She was a teacher for a long time, and that is a profession that is very near and dear to my heart because my mom's a teacher, my wife's a teacher. And I think if music did not swallow me up completely, I probably would have gone into that profession. So, but telling you about the gratitude that I have, is the sponsors that come onto the show. And one of them is rockabilia.com. You own band merch. I own band merch. I am wearing a old Piebald shirt right now that I got when I saw them Chain Reaction back in, like, I don't know, 1999, I think. I don't know. It was forever ago. But you need to continually update your band merch game, and Rockabilia is the place to go. Use the code PCJabberJaw. That's 15% off of your order. So you just think, you order $100 worth of stuff, you get 15 bucks off, which is basically like a free shirt, okay? That's what I'm trying to give you. And Rockabilia has officially licensed stuff from all your favorite bands. They have posters. They have 500,000 items that you possibly could dive into and order. So there's no reason that you should not experiment and try it out. They have great customer service, fast shipping, and it's co-owned by Hardcore Kid, okay? That's the real deal. I want to support businesses that are from our community as much as I possibly can, and Rockabilia is definitely one of them. So please order from them and use that code, because then they know that this show sent them, right? Okay. Gratitude, again, I have to say that, you know, when I go to shows, like I went to see American football the other night, American football and Phoebe Bridgers at the Observatory here in Orange County. And the show was awesome. Phoebe Bridgers is incredible. I saw her only, it was maybe January of this year, 2018. And she's already, you know, completely skyrocketed up into the quote unquote indie rock stardom. But she was great. American football, I did not have any true anticipation for them. Like, I honestly really enjoy American football. I like what they are and have done, and some of those songs are incredibly meaningful to me. But it is very, very weird for a band like that who has such a minimal recorded output to have this resurgence and then also put out a great record last year. Like, there's so many things that are a mystery, but watching the band, I was like, oh yeah, at the core of it, they just write really good songs and they're really good musicians and they're a great hang. And that's exactly what they were. It was super fun. But anyways, I met a person there who was like, hey, you're Ray Harkins. I love your podcast. And, you know, we started talking about that, and it isn't so much the whole, you know, ego gratification, the what I like to call the rockignition, you know, you get rockignized out in the world where it's like, oh, hey, that person's in a band, you know, it's not that. Like, I mean, yes, that feels good. And yes, that's cool. But it really is the community that is out in the real world that we are building, where it's like this, you listening to it right now, you are contributing to this community, whether you like it or not. Well, hopefully you like it, but I just feel so so lucky that that's a thing. And thank you to anybody who like comes up to me to show or emails me 100wordspodcast@gmail.com if you missed that. But yeah, that's what I got to tell you. So I just feel grateful. That's the simplest way that I can put it. But anyways, Christina, awesome chat. I could tell that there was a little nerves floating around with her, but after talking for a good, you know, 15 minutes or so, I felt that started to get kind of come at ease, because, you know, it's nerve-wracking for people who are used to interviews that are more kind of like, all right, I'll just talk to you like for 15 minutes and then, you know, we'll move along and I'll edit the piece and I'll put it up on the internet, or, you know, it'll be a 10-minute YouTube video or whatever. So people that are doing more long-form interviews can be a little nervous about it. And she definitely was, but like I said, it melted away. It was perfect. It wasn't like I felt the nerves would be picked up by you, the listener, but, you know, just full disclosure. And I get nervous before interviews too. They're just like, okay, how am I going to connect? How am I going to get my way in? Because, you know, sometimes it's difficult when you have mutual friends, but maybe there's, you know, you haven't met this person, which happens a lot for me. But anyways, here's the discussion with Christina, and I will talk to you at the end of the episode. Guessing that we have many mutual friends, but one of them being Jeremy from Touche, and I mean, mm-hmm. I've known him since he was like 14 years old or something like that. But
oh, that's so cool.
yes, back when he was a new metal kid. So, you know, it's okay. These things happen.
That's so awesome. Actually, the first episode that I listened to was the one that you did with him, like wrapping up 2017.
Oh, yes, fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was cool.
Appreciate that. But,
Yeah, so it's like, you know, anything that he is looking to, you know, put out on his label or whatever, you know, I talked to him about that stuff. And so he showed me your stuff and I was like, oh, like this is cool. Like I could see why you're interested in, you know, working with the band, listening to their music and everything. But, you know, the way that I listen to your band is very much, you're going to elicit two sort of responses. You're going to have people who are immediately into it and are like, yo, I love this. And you're going to have people being like, I can't stand this. Like either, you know, this is just, either too aggressive for me or whatever. Do you kind of notice that? Do you notice that response, or is that just kind of me, projecting on you and the band?
I notice it a little bit. I think we've definitely gotten like kind of a big, like supportive response really quickly, which was like really wild. And luckily we don't like, hear too much negative feedback, but, you do hear sometimes where people think it's like too preachy or too PC or like something like that.
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean,
yeah.
I know when you combined a, you know, visceral style of hardcore that you do, and then the fact that you have opinions and you express them on stage, you know, it can rub people the wrong way, where it's like, oh yeah, just, you know, keep that to yourself, which is insane in 2018, where it's that's existed in punk and hardcore ever since inception. So like, why would people expect anything different now than what it was back then? I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. I think you're just still like challenging people. Like, I feel like I don't hear like straight edge bands being called too preachy very often, but like when you're making people uncomfortable, then, you know,
right.
You're preachy.
That's true. When you actually have to reflect upon yourself is when you, well, that's a very good point. Cause I think I was reflecting on this recently myself, where, I don't know how familiar you are with that band Race Traitor. But like I, the first time that I myself considered white privilege in general, cause like, I mean, I am a stereotypical, you know, white kid from the middle to upper class family. And then Race Traitor comes to town and I'm like, you know, they put out a record called Burn the Idol of the White Messiah. And I was like, people have a different experience with different. I mean, it's like, it didn't occur to me. And so like, I mean, I didn't have, like you were saying, that reaction that some people have towards, you know, maybe Gouge Away, where it's like, oh, you know, stop talking about this stuff because it makes me uncomfortable. But it definitely just made me consider. And I think that, yeah, I mean, that's obviously a positive effect that your band and other bands have on people.
Yeah. I think with like our first full length too, it was pretty, pretty intentional. Like, when we were just like playing local shows and didn't ever even like imagine having a full length or anything like that. We just kind of like wrote whatever we wanted and the songs were about whatever we wanted and stuff like that. But then when we started playing shows and getting a little bit more attention, we were kind of like, people that we don't really want to like our band liked us. And I think it was a little bit of like, wow, a girl playing like in hardcore screaming, like that's so crazy. And like, they didn't really care what I was talking about. So then, when we got to writing the full length, it was very intentional. Like, we don't want someone to hear this and not know what we're about.
That's a very good point. Cause I mean, especially when bands, you know, come out and they have that, you know, as much as I hate to say the novelty idea of, you know, female fronting an aggressive band, like it takes a moment for people to not only reckon with it, but then kind of move past it and realize like obviously you're just a human playing in a band like that.
Yeah.
It is, like I said, I guess it is just weird because generationally speaking, you know, hardcore and punk, you know, generates itself every 2 years. So you're always going to have people that are experiencing it with a new set of eyes, but then people who, have been involved in the scene for, you know, even like 5+ years, don't look at, you know, the idea of a band either being political or a band being female fronted as being like, oh wow, like that's weird. It's like, no, that just happens like that.
Yeah. It's weird that it's a weird thing.
it is too, because it's happened so many times, and it can still be a thing from, you know, a press perspective or a, that it's like that, that's the only talking point. Like that's really like the first descriptor of, it's like, you know, gouge away, female fronted hardcore band.
Female fronted. Yeah.
Right. Which is like, I mean, you're not stupid. You understand like why people, you know, kind of address the band like that. But, you know, at the same time, I'm sure that you're like, okay, like we've put out enough releases. Like this shouldn't still be the thing.
Yeah. It's like,
this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. In my late teens, early 20s, I was burning the candle at both ends, like playing in a band, going to shows like almost every single night of the week. And I had friends and family being like, yo, you should chill out. Like, you know, you're just not only exhausted, but not giving the best version of yourself to me, to others, to people I was in relationships with. And I wish that someone would have been like, you know what? Hey, you should think about therapy, because I did that later on in life and it helped out tremendously. That is why I love working with BetterHelp. If you are thinking about giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is an amazing on-ramp for this. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. And if you do not vibe with the therapist for whatever reason, you can switch it at no additional charge. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and boom, you're off and running. So find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Everyone that's like a woman and a female fronted band that I know, we've all talked about this tirelessly, about like the relationship with female fronted, like the whole label. And it's like, for me coming up into music and stuff, the label was like kind of helpful because I could seek out things I could relate to. But at the same time, it's like when you're that person, it is really like, all right, there's more to me than just the fact that I'm a woman. Like, I just want to be in a band like everybody else.
Right. Yeah.
In a world where everyone is confined to their homes, society begins its largest bin watch to date. In the hallowed library of Hulu, or perhaps on a shelf of DVDs you haven't looked at in a decade, is a show that perfectly encapsulates life in the early aughts and launched a friendship that would inspire millions. Hi,
I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
In 2001, we starred in Scrubs, a sitcom that revealed a glimpse of what it was like to survive a medical internship. As Turk and JD, we explored guy love.
Nearly 20 years later, a lot has changed. We're not supermen, but we're still best friends. Given the mandatory lockdown, there's no better time to relive the series that brought us together in the first place. And we're doing it with a podcast.
That's right, people. We're going to bring friends and crew members and fellow cast members and writers. And guess what? We're going to even invite some of you to call into the podcast and ask all the questions you want of the entire Sacred Heart staff.
Join us for Fake Doctors, Real Friends on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That it's like, yeah, this doesn't continually need to be the thing, but yeah. Right. Kind of switching gears and focusing more on you as a person. So, you know, there are certain things that, you know, you've already put out there as far as your sort of biographical data that I'm not going to belabor and ask the same questions, but like, you know, you were, you know, born and raised in Florida. And I want to focus on Florida because it's a weird state in general. And then it's a weird state for, it's a weird state for, you know, hardcore, because it's like, there is such an intentionality of bands coming down there. Like, you know, when you come down there, you got to go back up, and sometimes there's not as many places to play on the way up. And so you guys, I mean, I've noticed this when I've spoken to many people over the years, where like you have had to create your own stuff for a long period of time and haven't had the luxury of bands coming through that you've been able to kind of, you know, rip them off and derive their experiences and be like, hey, let's start something that sounds like that band or whatever.
Oh God.
But do you like, does it, I guess, how does it kind of reflect on you being able to, you know, exist in the scene and seeing kind of how weird it is since you've been able to experience a lot of other different scenes?
Yeah. Florida is definitely its own beast. And I don't want to like pretend to know more than other people, but I feel like touring has definitely opened my eyes to that a lot. Like, I feel like especially South Florida is so far away from everything. Like, it takes like 7-8 hours just to get out of the state. And then you're not even in a major city when you get that far. And I don't know. It's just like,
No, it's okay. Are you being measured? Are you concerned about saying something, I guess, derogatory about your scene, or is it just, you're just kind of at a loss?
So, yeah.
Well, no, the reason I bring it up is not because like I'm trying to take shots at how, you know, weird that the, you know, South Florida hardcore scene is, because, but I do think it's just a real function of the scene in general down there, because it's like, you know, I mean, coming up in Southern California, like, we had the luxury of being located, you know, I mean, I'm in Orange County, so we were, you know, smack dab in between Los Angeles and San Diego. Mm-hmm. So like we always had a, you know, a decent amount of places to play, you know, all the way up from total DIY spaces to, you know, actual venues or whatever. But, you know, with you existing in South Florida, like I look at it in a much different, I look at it in a much different light, just because you guys had to, you know, create so many of your own spaces and like, you know, play in a ton of terrible bands. Like everybody does, you know, like that's not unique, but, I just wanted to see how you kind of reflected on, you know, kind of experiencing a tidbit of other scenes and then kind of comparing and contrasting to what you guys have down there.
Yeah. I will say that, keeping an all ages venue is like a constant struggle in South Florida. And people work really hard to like keep it thriving down there for sure. But that's a problem too, is when you run out of places to play, there's like nowhere to really go. And people try to keep up with like house shows and stuff like that. And I did that too when I lived in a house, but, those usually only last so long too. But yeah, as far as like seeing other scenes, especially because I started touring pretty young, it definitely opened my eyes up a lot to like, there used to, when I would tour, like when I was younger, I started touring when I was like 19. And in South Florida, there's no talk about like women in bands or anything. Like I used to go to shows and there would be like maybe two other girls in the whole venue. And I would just be like, okay, this is weird. Like, I really want to be here, but it doesn't feel like I should be here. And then just, I'm really lucky that I did get to tour, because getting to see other scenes like Philly, where it's just like, it was already 100 steps ahead of us. And it was cool to just see like, there's some, like, that does exist. And it's something that's like real.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's always, I have always, you know, I mean, part of the attraction, I know for myself, and, you know, I'm probably speaking for you a little bit as well, where the attraction to spaces that are kind of, you know, transitory, where it's like, okay, it's special that we have this, you know, space to play shows. And even though you don't have the perspective on it when you're, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, you kind of in the back of your head are like, I don't know how long this is going to last. Like, I don't know how many times the, you know, the cops will come by and shut down a show, or, you know, the safety, the safety of the venue comes into question. But you kind of feel like, you know, it's very reflective of that particular moment. And so many people speak in reverence to places that, are just kind of, you know, it's like, oh, this venue existed for a year, but oh my God, like so much stuff happened during that time.
Yeah, I could definitely relate to that too. I used to have house shows for a short period of time, because I really cared a lot about creating that like inclusive scene. Like, we try to make it a rule where like the show wasn't dominated only by like male fronted bands and stuff like that. And I don't know. It was just like, you mentioned the cops being called and stuff like that. And it was just kind of cute because we lived like surrounded by old people and like we were always like worried about bothering them and getting the cops called and stuff. And then on the day when we moved out, our like old neighbor came by and was like, oh no, no more shows, I used to like sit on my porch tapping my foot. And it was just like the cutest thing in the whole world.
that's adorable because they always because they, you know, they're looking at this like weird scene playing out in front of them. And it's like, you know, that sort of stuff, you know, just observing youth culture from a distance, like that kind of, you know, in a way keeps you young because you're watching what the, you know, the youths are into or whatever. And it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Like I remember the, myself and, Joey that runs 613 on Records, like we did Sound and Fury, for a couple of years when it was in Santa Barbara. And I always remember the conversations that we had with people, cause Santa Barbara is like, you know, a total old person town, like people retire there. And we always had conversations with people, you know, around that general area of, you know, they were always watching us with this kind of like curious, I don't want to say reverence because it's not like they really respected the fact that, you know, 16-year-old kids were being stupid in a parking lot or whatever, but like just that, but yeah, that sort of like cultural observation of like, well, as long as they're not doing anything to like our place, our house or whatever, or like, you know, sound pollution or anything like that, that they would, you know, generally go by, unchecked, but they always kind of, the watchful eye existed.
Yeah. Yeah, you always kind of assume people are going to be opposed to it.
You definitely, from what I can tell, you came from a very supportive household in regards to, you know, fostering your love for music and getting exposed to, you know, loud music at an early age. You know, what were, just because, you know, it definitely does seem like parents of that ilk are, you know, doing like they either are have just continued to foster their love of music over the years. Or did you get a sense that they kind of like just really identified with, you know, grunge in the early 90s and then started to, you know, expose you to that? How, like, did you kind of notice that love of music always existing, or did they kind of dip in and out?
Oh yeah. It definitely always existed. my dad played guitar since he was a baby. And my mom grew up going to shows, and that's how she met my dad, which is kind of crazy.
What sort of shows? Like, what, you know, what show did they meet at?
My dad would just like play in bands and my mom would go.
Okay.
Yeah. But when I was growing up, like when I was very, very young, it was the early 90s and like, you know, music ruled and was everywhere. And, my parents, like, I remember playing like musical chairs to like The Offspring and like There Was No Doubt and Green Day and Smashing Pumpkins and just like Gin Blossoms, The Cure, Nirvana, just like everything in our household and in the car, and I was just very, very used to that.
That's awesome. I do think that they're the only reason I asked kind of about their trajectory of love for music, because it's like I find it interesting when you know, people who, because I think that Spotify did a study a couple years ago where I think the age that people dip out of like trying to pursue new music is like 32 or 33. Like, that's basically when people kind of reach critical mass and are like, all right, I don't want to do anything more with music. But then, but then certain people where it's just like, you know, whatever, they turn 40 and all of a sudden are like, oh man, like I like Five Finger Death Punch. And you're just like, where'd that come? Like, you haven't listened to music in like 10 years. How did that happen? But that's not like what happened with your parents, which is cool.
No, yeah, my mom was, she's still interested in like knowing what's current. Like when I was old enough to start going to shows, she would like have a common interest with me and would like go to like concerts and stuff too, which like at a certain age got kind of awkward. But she liked, I don't know, like Anti-Flag and like stuff like that when I was into it. And I still show her bands now. Like, I was driving around with her a few weeks ago and I showed her Culture Abuse and she's like, oh, this is great.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you can there's that common bond where you can share stuff and they actually genuinely like it, you know? Like, I definitely envy that, because I remember so many times where it's like I listen to bands and I'm like, all right, I think my mom will understand this better than, you know, my screaming hardcore punk. Like, I'll play her Mineral or Elliot. And she listens to it and it's just like, nah, it doesn't take. I'm like, damn it. I thought we could have had a bond.
Yeah. It's funny because my parents kind of like hated the screaming stuff. And of course, it's like what I ended up doing. But
yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
what do your parents do for a living?
My dad like works high up with like loans and banking and stuff like that. And my mom, like since before I was born, she's had the same job forever, which is she does like nightclub management.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, which is really cool, because when I was young, I used to like try to go to work with her all the time, because they actually get all the CDs of all the music that's going to be on the radio like weeks before it's on the radio. So I would just like try to go to work with my mom all the time and like listen to everything before it came out and like make mixtapes for my friends and stuff.
That's awesome.
So that's a pretty cool job.
Yeah, no, totally. That's yeah. Like you feel like you're on the tip of new stuff, where it's like, wow, I get to listen to this, you know, new record before it comes out. Like I'm so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome.
And you also have, an older sister that is like super into music and tours and stuff like that as well. Correct?
She's younger than me.
Oh, younger. Okay. My bad.
Yeah. That happens a lot where people think we're twins. yeah, she started playing ukulele and playing shows like solo. And then she started bands as well. Her band, is having their last show actually this Sunday. because she's moving out of town.
Ah, got it.
Yeah, we do have that in common.
Yeah. And was it just you two in the house as far as kids were concerned?
Yes.
Nice. And then did you, did you guys kind of have that sort of, you know, sister versus sister mentality that I know kind of exists in some families, or did you guys generally get along?
When we got along, we were best friends, and we definitely had a lot of hard times. We were definitely very mean to each other, for sure. Luckily, we both grew out of that, and we're really close now, but, we were like, we had a lot in common, and like being the older sister, I didn't want my younger sister to like copy me or have anything in common with me. I wanted to be opposite.
Right.
Probably because everyone also thought we were twins, but I was older. But yeah, I wanted like us both to have our own identities, and that kind of like made things rough sometimes.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because I do think that's something that so many people go through in either, mm-hmm. you know, familial relationships, or, you know, once you start to, you know, like date other people and like start to exist in romantic relationships. Because I think, like, you know, when you first start to, you know, whatever, date in high school, like you almost want like a sort of a direct reflection of yourself. It's like, oh man, I want a person that's like super into the same stuff that I'm into. And like, you know, like we can go to show, but then you realize where it's like, oh no, like that's like, I want a person that's also like bringing their own stuff to the table. And like, you don't realize mm-hmm. that until you're older, in the same way that like you're saying, where now that you've both staked out your corners of interest, that it's like, oh yeah, like that's a positive thing.
Oh my God. Yeah. We like, used to share a wall, and my parents probably hated us, but we had like opposite ends of the spectrum as far as musical taste. And she would like be blasting like Michelle Branch or Paramore in her room, and I would be trying to outdo her with like Circle Takes a Square, just something like really loud and obnoxious. And
that's amazing.
I don't know. We're just always. Just always battling.
I really appreciate the visual, because that is amazing, where you're just like having these polar opposite music just like clashing with one another in a battle.
Yeah. But then I just got into Paramore like with that the After Laughter album.
Yeah.
I love it. And right. I was like, oh my God, Shauna, I'm a Paramore fan. Finally.
Yeah. And you're like going to the back catalog and you're like, oh wow, this is actually pretty good. Maybe I should have listened to that back then.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Age is a weird thing. It makes you, revisionist history exists in a lot of spaces, especially with music too, where you're like, oh wow, actually that was pretty good. Maybe I just wasn't ready for it then.
Oh yeah. Or you're just like stubborn and don't want to like it.
Right. But, yeah. Like out of principle alone, you couldn't allow yourself to like it. Something else I want to hit on was the, you were a competitive dancer and, you know, into drums. And I mean, it sounds like basically all that stuff kind of ran into a wall once you, were diagnosed with, was it blood clots in your arms? Is that what was?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, and that sounds like it was happening around what, 14, 15 years old? Am I correct?
Yeah.
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 So, you know, that's a really delicate time for a person to have to kind of switch the stuff that they're into because of a health mm-hmm. issue. Like, you know, did you have to do a lot of kind of, I guess, soul searching and sort of like figure out, you know, what it is you want to, be into? Or was that kind of a easy transition for you to kind of drop that and then figure out some other stuff?
It was really hard. My whole world was like playing drums, which I did every day after school. And I would like take drum lessons on the weekend. And then dance was also like my whole world, because I put like so many hours into that, and we would have to go to competitions, and I just loved everything about it. And I loved like the discipline and the performing and every aspect of it. And then to just like one day be told like, you can't do it anymore at all. It was really, really hard. But like, I kept like getting these treatments and everything to get better. And it took probably a year. But as soon as I had even like the tiniest, like, okay, that I'm good to go, I was just right back at it. And I would even like, I scared my like teachers a lot too, because I was just like ready to go. And they're like, you can't, no, you have to sit this out. And, but.
Yeah. I appreciate you walking me through that, because I think it's, you know, I mean, people sample so much stuff when they're that age, and you know, they're your emotions run high, and everything you're into is like the, you know, the most dramatic end of the world thing. And to have, you know, to have you run into something and not be able to do it because of, you know, something that you can't control whatsoever, you know, usually.
Yeah.
Usually people experience that, you know, when they're maybe a little bit older, whether it's like, oh, I'm not going to be a professional basketball player or whatever it is, you know, where it's like, oh, maybe I'm not that good in comparison to other people. But like, you had to, you know, drop that because of, you know, something that was completely out of your control. And then, you know, I mean, I know that you were raised in a very, you know, musical household, and you were, you know, encouraged to, you know, go to Warped Tour with your mom and everything like that. But, you know, but like, how did you, you know, I guess how did kind of independent music start to like, you know, what was your, like, I guess, what was your gateway? You know, I mean, you're already primed up with the fact that you were listening to so much music, but like how, you know, how, what was that first, you know, MP3 burn CD mix or whatever? What was the entry point for you?
I'm not sure, because I feel like it happened so fast, but I know definitely like the most monumental thing for me was when I was in middle school, and I was already like, I don't know, I was already just like trying to find it. It might have been because of me and my sister trying to, you know, be different from each other, or I was already trying to look for bands that she's probably never heard of before. But
enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
My name is Ariel. I moved to the U.S. at 19. I spoke no English and I struggled finding job opportunities. Everything I have, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and getting my high school diploma at age 22.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
I was already like kind of into that stuff. And then I would make friends, you know, in school that way. And I got invited to a show, just like some local show. My friend said his brother was playing and I was like, great. And it was at like this really shitty skate park called Piss. I just went there that one day. I was like, this is crazy. There's like people my age and bands playing music. And then I just kept going like every weekend until it closed.
That's amazing. Yeah. Finding that local venue where you could have the touch and the feel of something where it's like, oh, yeah. Wow, these people exist around me and they're playing in bands and they're doing stuff.
Yeah. It's absolutely crazy.
Right. And it also seems to me too, that like, you know, basically once you kind of discovered independent music and, you know, you started going to shows, and it seems like you were really, interested in the community building aspect of it, you know, from, mm-hmm. like you said, I mean, you put on shows and like, you know, there was a, I guess, a unification goal of what you were doing.
Yeah.
And so like, I don't know, where did that kind of like come up? Like, you know, was that just because you, you know, wanted to kind of bring everybody together, or was that sort of a natural extension of some other, you know, personality trait you had? I was just curious.
I am really unsure.
That's fine.
yeah, I don't know where that came from. I know, like, just from being a kid, I just wanted to like get along with everyone. Like, I was the farthest thing from a bully.
In a world where everyone is confined to their homes, society begins its largest bin watch to date. In the hallowed library of Hulu, or perhaps on a shelf of DVDs you haven't looked at in a decade, is a show that perfectly encapsulates life in the early aughts and launched a friendship that would inspire millions. Hi, I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
In 2001, we starred in Scrubs, a sitcom that revealed a glimpse of what it was like to survive a medical internship. As Turk and JD, we explored guy love.
Nearly 20 years later, a lot has changed. We're not supermen, but we're still best friends. Given the mandatory lockdown, there's no better time to relive the series that brought us together in the first place. And we're doing it with a podcast.
That's right, people. We're going to bring friends and crew members and fellow cast members and writers. And guess what? We're going to even invite some of you to call into the podcast and ask all the questions you want of the entire Sacred Heart staff.
Join us for Fake Doctors, Real Friends on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you? Let me do a little armchair psychology here. Do you avoid conflict? Like, are you a person that would like to, you know? And I don't use this in a disparaging way, but like, you know, would you kind of run from conflict rather than be like, I just can't handle that, or is that not something you identify with?
Let's see. I think that I'm obviously extremely shy. I hate conflict. I hate all awkward, uncomfortable situations.
Got it.
But I also think I just understand that I have to deal with a lot of things, especially like being in a political band and like caring about people for some reason is a strange issue. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I that's I mean the reason why I'm playing armchair psychologist is because I identify mm-hmm. with what you were saying. The because I would avoid conflict at all costs. I'm very much, you know, you and I are cut from the same cloth as far as like, yeah, I just want, you know, like I like to organize stuff and make other people feel good, and everybody kind of comes together and is like, you know, I don't do it for the attention of like, oh, like, you know, Ray is the center of attention because he's doing this. I'm just like, dude, that's so rad. This thing that I put together, like people enjoy, you know?
And I, for sure.
But then I'm sure it's happened to you too, where sometimes people misread that as being like, oh, you're egotistical and you do want to be kind of the center of attention. Like, I don't know if that's kind of boomerang back at you at all, or if that's just something that has never been brought up.
To my knowledge, it hasn't been brought up.
That's good.
At least not to me. But
right.
I think it is like a fear at the same time that I've always had, where it's like, I want to do these things, but I don't want people to think I'm doing it just for the credibility or whatever.
Right. No, that's cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then is Gadgetway ostensibly kind of your first band from like a sort of touring and releasing music perspective, or were you involved in some other terrible stuff beforehand that I'm sure is you'd like to erase in some capacity?
Luckily it's my first band. I think I can say that.
Right. Well, yeah. what would make you not say that?
Nothing is recorded. There's no proof of anything else.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
um, And so, but then you also, like you mentioned before, where, you know, you were, you had a strong desire to like get on the road and, you know, do merch for friends, bands and stuff like that. And as you started to like get out there and actually experience touring, did you immediately like it? Was it something that you thought it was going to be, or was it like completely different? How did that kind of rattle around in your head?
I absolutely loved it. Like immediately I went, how it worked was I used to just like book shows. So, I got into booking tours just from meeting a lot of like international bands who had come to us. And, I had some friends that wanted to book a tour, but didn't know how, so I did it for them. And then that was my way of being like, take me with you. And, I just fell in love with it. And they're all like my best friends at the time. And it was the most fun. Just like every little tiny detail was so exciting. Just like passing the Florida border was like
huge.
So fun. Yeah. Or like, this is our first tea in Georgia. This is our first like taco in Georgia, like everything.
Right. No, I appreciate the description of that, because it is, you know, once you have that little taste of something where it's like you feel like you're in uncharted waters and it's exciting and you don't eat, and you're like, I was able to like help pull this together. Like, this is crazy that I'm experiencing.
Yes. Yeah.
But I'm also drawn to the fact that you were, you know, like booking shows, like, you know, you were ostensibly a booking agent, even though, you know, I doubt that you would ever label yourself as such, because you were working on such a smaller DIY level. That's really stressful. I mean, I did that for years for my own band as well. And I know that even though it was gratifying to like book these shows and put this stuff together, it was also like really stressful. Like, did you feel any stress as you were doing that? Or was that just kind of like, no, I can handle this?
Oh yeah. I still feel that stress now. Like, I book Galjoy's tours and I'm just a constant ball of stress. It just doesn't go away.
Got it. Yeah. Well, that,
yeah. But it's worth it.
Sure. Well, yeah, as long as you feel that the juice is worth the squeeze. I'm sorry, that's terrible, but like, yeah. But yeah, it doesn't, you know, as you get older and as you become, you know, a more quote unquote professional band, you feel like more is riding on it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It like is slightly easier because you have the contacts, like you don't have to build from zero, but you know, you have to care about surviving more when you get older.
Right. Yeah.
You have to care about eating.
Right.
And stuff like that.
Yeah. You're like, you can't come home with like, you know, a negative $4,000 debt where it's like, oh
yeah.
Oh, that's crushing. Like I can't do that to not only myself, but then everybody else in the band that has to shoulder the weight as well.
Mm-hmm. Mick says you have to tour smarter, not harder.
Yes. It's a very, very true statement, but, but easier said than done.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, I imagine as you were, you know, going through high school and then, you know, kind of figuring out what you wanted to do from a sort of career / job perspective, like you, at one point you were a kindergarten teacher, correct?
Yes.
Are you still currently or no?
No.
Okay.
One day I hope to go back to that because I love it. But it's hard to do both touring and be a teacher. Everyone says like, oh, you have summers off, but if you want to do 100%, you can't do both.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah.
Even as a teacher, like you can't, I don't know. It's really hard to be in a touring band and give yourself 100%.
Oh yeah, for sure. I come from a family of educators. My wife's a teacher. My mom was a teacher. So like, I respect the profession immensely. And it's, like when I read that about you, I was like, wow, like that's a, and especially too, like, you know, you were teaching kindergarten and that is a, you know, that's such a formative age for kids, even though, you know, most people look at it, it's just like, oh, it's, you know, they just play all day or whatever. It's like, no, this is like serious stuff that's being done here.
Oh yeah. There's almost no playing anymore. But that's why I was interested in kindergarten too, because it is such a formative age.
Right. And was that something that you did you go to college and everything like that to, study to get your degree to allow you to teach?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And that was kind of the vision. Like, I guess, when did that kind of come into your head? Like, oh, wow. Like, education as a profession is a cool thing.
I think I just always kind of saw myself being a teacher. Ever since I was like in elementary school, I had the teachers that I loved who like influenced me so much to the teachers I hated. And I would always just think like, I never want to be like that person. And I think just throughout my life, I was always like being conditioned to be a teacher one day.
That's cool. That's cool. This was something that sort of, it's related to it, but like, I'm going to presume that, cause you were playing you were starting Gouge Away as you were a teacher, and you had to kind of strike the balance between the two and ultimately realize that was too difficult. But were you ever concerned that, parents were going to, discover the fact that you play in a yelling, screaming band and they'd be like, oh my gosh, like this woman cannot teach my kids or anything? Or was that just something you were like, nah?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. 100%. Like, I was afraid of my principal finding out or my teacher friends or anybody.
So you kept it super low profile.
Yes. And people kind of started figuring it out. No one would really tell me, but I started getting like hints. Like, people would tell me about cool concerts they went to when they were a kid and stuff like that. And I'm just like, this is kind of fishy. I don't like this. Like, someone like was like, oh, I went backstage for Stained. And I was just like, okay, cool.
Yeah. Good to know. Are you trying to bond with me for this story?
Yeah. This isn't going anywhere. But yeah, I don't use my last name for that reason.
Got it. That makes sense.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. You're like, yeah. these are two distinct worlds that need to live apart from each other. And not because I'm ashamed of one or the other, but I'm worried about the implications that other people would put on me.
Yeah. It's a very realistic like fear. I mean, people get fired and have issues over the stupidest thing. So
yeah. No, the only reason I bring it up is not to, highlight that fact. It's just the fact that, I have a 7-year-old son and he's going into first grade, and like, I look at like how I personally am treated within the context of just like literally just being a parent. And like, I'm nice and I'm approachable, but like, I've got tattoos and I wear weird band shirts, and like people don't know what to do with that. And then in the back of my head, I'm also like, oh, like, I know that I am strange because of what I'm into and, the things that I do. And I can imagine, putting myself in your shoes, I would be concerned that parents would just, assume the worst because you happen to be this individual or whatever.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And you're looking after their kids and, they care so much about who's in that classroom all day.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. Yeah. Well, yeah, I hope that over time, that becomes a easier, road to go down to where, you don't feel like that judgment can be levied on you,
But yeah, I hope so too. Like, even just in general, I feel like one day the tattoo, like colored hair thing, I feel like it'll hopefully be normal one day.
Yeah, no, it's well, to anecdotally speaking, there's at my son's preschool, there was a girl that, and it's so funny because like, you and I know this sort of stuff when we just like look at people with tattoos, we can like kind of, already tell where it's like, oh, I think they know what's up. Like, I think
yeah.
And like, she had like a little, a little V with a leaf tattooed on her wrist. And I was like, oh damn, she's vegan. And it's like, but like most, mm-hmm. most other people would be like, oh, is your name Veronica? It's like, but
yeah.
But yeah, so I tell that to you because there is there is a little more, leniency, probably just depending on the part of the country that you're in as well. So, you know, maybe you can move to Southern California and teach. No one will care, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as like you mentioned kind of at the very top where it's like, you know, gouge away, you guys got a pretty good, head of steam going, from once you started to play shows, in your area, and then you started to, expand that and play shows outside of Florida and everything like that. You know, and because it's your first band that, you have to kind of be the sort of business person of the band. I mean, I know that you're not the one making all the decisions like some dictatorship or anything, but does the business aspect of the band kind of interest you? Does it scare you? Like, where, how does it kind of sit in your head?
As far as like what?
Just as far as like, I mean, when I say dealing with record labels, it's not like dealing with Jeremy as like some, he's the suit and you're the band or whatever, but just in dealing with like, okay, what's our guarantee for this show? And like, can we ask more for this? Or like, how are we going to, how are we going to do this tour? And just, the intricacies of playing in a band that you don't really consider when you, you start it. And then all of a sudden you have to like really consider all of these things like, oh, I guess we'll put out this record with this person and all that sort of stuff.
I think a lot of it is really fun. Like I love, like when we were ironing everything out with Jeremy, that was so much fun. And talking to like Deathwish, like Rich and Trey and everyone makes everything feel very comfortable. Like even though we have to make big decisions and agree on stuff, I feel like they're on our side. It's not like we're like fighting some giant or something like that. But as far as like all the money stuff, I hate. I think it's the most uncomfortable thing in the world, just like making sure we're getting paid enough and stuff like that. It's very important, but I hate that role.
And what is it that makes you feel uncomfortable? I mean, I can make a guess, but I'd rather hear from you.
I don't know. Go ahead, guess. Maybe you know more than I do. No.
Well, I mean, I see this comment. I mean, this is not, directly reflective of you, but I definitely think there's this, the punk guilt creeps in.
Yes.
Where it's like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe, the notion of getting paid $1,000 to play a show. It's like, in most people's heads that come from the scene that we come from, it would be kind of like, wow, that's wild. Like, that's crazy. Or, getting paid, you got paid 10 grand to play a show or whatever. Like, these are things that like, if you were to actually do the numbers of like, oh, a band is getting paid 10 grand to headline a show and it's like a $18 ticket and like, oh yeah, the venue made like 30 grand or whatever, but yeah, so I'm going to imagine kind of some of your reservations are kind of, tied up into that notion of like, oh, it's like, I mean, yeah, everybody needs money, but like, what's the, appropriate balance that we can strike with like making money, but not being like greedy and not being too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think you're right. There is a lot of like guilt in that. And my method at this point, hopefully we get like a booking agent or help like pretty soon.
Right.
Because my method of doing it is just like not asking and then just being like, I hope this works out.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very good.
Yeah. No, that's
a good way to do it.
Right. It is. When you try to be as transparent as humanly possible, I think it's, it doesn't have to be this like weird negotiation. Like you can just be like, hey, we need like this much money to play this show or whatever. And, people, people either be like, yes, we can, or no, we can't, And sometimes that works well. And other times that, then you don't have a show or whatever, but
yeah.
And last two things I want to hit on was the, because of the, nature of, what you speak about in your lyrics and what you speak about on stage, and the fact that, we exist within the scene that, fosters that, that sort of speech and that sort of, you know, that mentality that you can speak on stage and, you know, yes, it may make people feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm. like we were talking about earlier. Are you ever concerned about the sort of preaching to the choir element of like, oh yes, like everybody know, you know, getting up there and being like, sexism is bad. Like, you know,
yeah.
not saying that you are just saying that and that's yeah. your only argument, but like, you know, do you, does that kind of, is that a thought process that goes through your head of like, oh man, like, you know, I'm just saying the same ish stuff that other people have said to these same people that have showed up or whatever. Or is it just kind mm-hmm. of speaking to your truth and that's kind of what you focus on?
I reflect on that a lot. I think when that last record came out, I was painfully shy about playing in general, like no matter how many times we've done it. And I think I was trying to just get used to talking, as well as like all this stuff was very important and we wanted to deter, you know, shitty people from just getting into us or whatever, like change people's minds or have people just consider something they hadn't before. Like all that was super important. But I think an element was just like getting used to talking. Like a lot of it was equally just practice. And I have reflected on that a lot as well, just how I don't think that I need to speak for other groups of people. I think there's plenty of bands doing that for themselves. So I've definitely like stepped back from that a lot. And as far as like sexual abuse and stuff like that is also something that like I've actually gone through myself, but, I felt like I was getting into this like really terrible routine of feeling like I had to talk about it every night. Mm-hmm. And, it's just like mentally and emotionally like exhausting to actually do that. And I kind of just, I don't know where it came from, but I eventually just like, cause I'm like beating myself up for every single show, just like having to talk about this and relive it.
Right.
And I kind of like put this big like importance on it where I felt like if I didn't talk about it, then like, what was the point? But, after a while of like playing with so many other bands and realizing that like they just play their set and have a great time and they're done. They're not dealing with heavy shit all night. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I should be able to like do that too.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, to your point, like if you feel like this, you know, it's an opportune time to speak about it, or you feel like, you know, mm-hmm. you've given yourself enough, you know, mental distance where it's like, okay, now I feel like I can speak about this with perspective as opposed to, you know, feeling like you're just, you know, trudging up. I mean, you'll always trudge up bad memories when it's attached to something like that, but that you feel like you can actually, you know, communicate it properly as opposed to like this horrible thing happened in my life and I'm, you know, I'm spilling it out into the world. And like, there is, you know, it, like you said, it's just kind of beating yourself up as opposed to, you know, maybe something that, I mean, I'm sure
it's addressing it.
Yeah. Or, I mean, mm-hmm. I know that element is constructive for people. Cause like, I always reflect on how, you know, a band like Boy Sets Fire, it's like, you know, when they had a song called like In Hope that was, you know, about rape. And it was one of those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like, you know, 98. And like, I just remember seeing them and being like, you know, moved to literal tears because of this. But like, I nor any of my family has experienced this, but like them crystallizing that emotion was so powerful. And, you know, the next couple times that I saw them, you know, they would maybe play that song, but they maybe wouldn't put themselves through it in the way that they did previously. And I think that you've arrived at that same conclusion where it's like the power can still be there. It just doesn't have to be so, I guess, dirty on stage, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has served a big purpose. Like I have made a lot of connections with people based on going through all of that, but yeah, it's just, I think dirty is a good word. It's just, I don't know, kind of rough.
Yeah. Oh, I totally understand where you're coming from. It doesn't, you feel like you can, essentially you can last longer within the context of you playing in your band. If you don't have to, you know, put yourself through the ringer every single night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then hopefully that will afford more, you know, more impact to more people because you're not just burning yourself out in like, you know, a year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And the last thing where, I wanted to hit on this, that, you know, because you are, you know, you guys are focused on, you know, making the band a priority and you kind of all, you know, it sounds to me like you've kind of all built your lives, you know, around the band as far as like, you know, you're working sort of transitionary jobs and stuff that will allow you to kind of take off for tours and stuff like that. You know, does, I guess, do you feel the sense of, I wouldn't say pressure, but like, you know, because you're putting your eggs in this basket, are you kind of looking at it from a sort of experiential standpoint, or are you looking at it from like the, well, friends of ours have achieved this, so like, let's try to, you know, achieve that same thing, or is it kind of a mixture of all those things?
I think it is a mixture of quite a bit. You know, when we started the band, it was just, we just want to play one show and put out an EP, and then it just like continues and continues and continues where like we're doing things we absolutely never thought we ever would. And I think it just like continues to create new goals where now we know we want to do an international tour, or like, you know, we wanted to put out this next LP because we felt like we grew a lot since the last one. And I think it's just like all these little goals that keep coming up that keep us going, where we just want to see what keeps happening. And I don't feel like there's like a destination in mind. Like, I don't think any of us are like, one day we're gonna sell out House of Blues and, you know, that's the goal. Like, that's not even on our radar.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't know. I think, like, and we have all talked about it a lot. I think it's just something that we all just really want to do. And
right. And then, well, no, I know. It's hard to kind of vocalize that. I appreciate you trying to do it. I think it's, you know, at least the way that I've always, I've personally looked at it kind of through the lens of, you know, my experience and then also other people's experiences, is that you are looking at this thing where it's like, okay, we have this band, we have this vehicle, it's only going to exist for, you know, a period of time mm-hmm. in my life. So like, why not try to do as much as we can with it? And we don't know what that as much as we can, like, we don't know what that means, yeah. You know, but you know, I'm sure where it's like, you know, if you're looking back on yourself a couple of years ago, you would have never thought that you would have been able to achieve, you know, half of what Gouge Away has done, you know?
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
Yeah. You're like, I never thought that I would be speaking to a person on a podcast about my band. Like, why would anybody care about
that?
No,
I didn't think that until a few days ago when this happened. When I got the email for it.
Yeah, you're like, oh yeah, sounds cool. But I mean, yeah, to that point, it's like, you know, you don't know what things will happen when you put something out there, and it's just like, oh wow, like I guess we're gonna do this now. Like, cool. I didn't think that I was gonna
yeah.
do that.
It's so exciting to just kinda have no idea. Like, we've just even playing with the bands that we've played with. I mean, like, Tina Black is like my dream band to play with, and we did that, and it's just like weird.
Right.
So we're always like, all we do is talk about like, what if we play with this band? Like, that'd be cool. And then we just try to do it.
Right. Yeah. Let's see if we can achieve this. Oh wow. Like, that happened. Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Well, I really appreciate you hanging out. This has been fun for me, and thank you for letting me pick around your life like you did.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hell yeah, that was a great discussion. I don't know why I have to sing these outros. And I always have the same cadence on it, too. My son makes fun of me because there are many things that I like sing to him, whether it's like, I don't know, go clean up the dishes or, you know, just tasks around the house. And he's just like, why are you singing, Dad? I'm like, I don't know, because it's fun. And so he does it as well. So anyways, thank you very much, Christina. Thank you very much, Stephanie, her publicist, for helping hook this up. And like I said, Gouge Away is a new record coming out on Secret Voice / Death Wish in the fall, October, November. I should be a professional and like look up the actual date, but it's in the fall, so pay attention. And the song that you heard at the very beginning is a new song of theirs. So there you go. What do I have next week? I have a actually much requested guest. People who have hit me up about having this guy on the show, and we've always traveled in the same circles, never met. Finally made it happen. I was like, you know what? Let's slide into your DMs and be like, yo, dude, let's make it happen. Sunny Singh from Hate 56. And if you're not familiar with Hate 56, you just should Google it. But basically, he is a documentarian of the hardcore and independent music scene. He has so many videos up. Like, if you've ever done a YouTube dive on a band, you undoubtedly have run across one of his videos. He's prolific. He has turned it into his full-time thing. And it's awesome. So I had Sunny on the show, and that's what's happening next week. Okay. Now, usually I just sign off right here, but today is a weird day because basically I'm waiting for my wife to get the news and the results back from tests. And I just always, it's always anxious mixed with like excitement because I want to get that good news, or, you know, potentially bad news. I just want to get it, you know, you want to get it so you can kind of move on. And, you know, many of you still check in on me as far as like, oh, how's your wife? I hope you're doing well. And I just had to kind of put that in there for those of you that check in, because I really genuinely do appreciate it. Like, I legit closed my eyes right there as I was talking, because that's how much I appreciate it. It's kind of overwhelming. So anyways, hopefully I will come back next week with some positive news from that perspective. And then we will hear from Sunny as well. All right. Until next week, please be safe, everybody.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com. Shh.
Hi there, I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
We're real life best friends, but we met playing fake life best friends, Turk and JD, on the sitcom Scrubs.
20 years later, we've decided to rewatch the series one episode at a time, and put our memories into a podcast you can listen to at home.
We're going
to
get all our special guest friends like Sarah Chalk, John C. McGinley, Neil Flynn, Judy Reyes.
Show creator Bill Lawrence, editors, writers, and even prop masters will tell us about what inspired the series and how we became a family.
You can listen to the podcast Fake Doctors, Real Friends with Zach and Donald on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
My simple solution to the problem was remove people from the scene and help them feel safer.
In response to attacks against Asian Americans, Maddie Park raised over $250,000 to donate cab rides to the Asian community.
There is so much more work to be done. We really need to come together and tackle this issue as a community.
Support the Asian community. Learn how at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.